It's 6 minutes after 10 o'clock. Good morning. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn today on the Ideas Network. One of the first things that the Obama administration and a newly elected and democratically controlled Congress did was to pass a $787 billion stimulus package in an attempt to jumpstart the economy. About half of that money has been spent so far, according to a report that I heard earlier this morning on National Public Radio. Part of that stimulus money went to the Department of Defense and was to be used for, among other things, to spiff up military bases around the country, making repairs, improving infrastructure, etc. Well, there was a news report recently carried in USA Today, and it originated on a website called ProPublica.org, which revealed that the Department of Defense spent almost $30 million of that money in contracts with firms under investigation by the federal government for allegedly defrauding the federal government. And the question is, why would the Defense Department do that? We have a guest, or we had a guest, lined up to discuss this issue. In fact, it was the reporter who broke the story, Michael Grable, who reports for the website ProPublica.org. We have been having a little bit of trouble getting a hold of Mr. Grable, but we understand that he should be with us shortly. In the meantime, I'll tell you how you can get a hold of us. We're here, and I think, as far as I know, we're on the air. You can call 800-486-8655. Did you see this story on USA Today or hear about it? 800-486-8655 is the toll-free number to use. That's good just about anywhere, at least anywhere in the 48 contiguous United States. The email address, which is good anywhere around the world, is talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. Some would argue that $30 million out of a $787 billion spending package is probably not as much, not worth looking at. I guess maybe we may have gotten a little jaded about the amounts of money that are important anymore. I don't know about you. To me, $1 million is still a lot of money. Maybe I'm old. At any rate, we're going to talk about this topic this hour, and you're welcome to join us if you've got questions or maybe you've got an example of something else similar that you are aware of that you'd like to share with us, or maybe you think this is much ado about nothing. 800-486-8655 or talk@wpr.org. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn this morning and wanting to know what you would think about a story like this. Again, we're talking about some contracts that were awarded by the Defense Department. In this case, it was the Air Force primarily, which was using the money to do work on infrastructure on bases around the country. And there were some 112 stimulus projects on U.S. military bases. Some of them were suspended by, well, the Air Force suspended some firms from receiving new government contracts after there was enough protest made about the fact that some of these contractors were under federal investigation. I should point out that there have been no indictments. No one has been charged with a crime or convicted. And so one of the questions we'll be talking about with Mr. Grable is, what about innocent until proven guilty? Okay, I understand our guest is ready to go. Mike Grable is a reporter for the website ProPublica.org. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
First of all, tell me a little bit about ProPublica. What is it?
ProPublica is a nonprofit investigative journalism organization that was started about a year ago to sort of fill the gap as newspapers were cutting back the resources that they could dedicate to investigative reporting.
And how did you come up on this particular story?
Well, I've been covering the stimulus package since January, and one of the things that I've heard since early on was that there was a lot of concern about contractors who've had problems in the past getting these stimulus contracts. So when the new data came out in October on recovery.gov, I compared, essentially did some data work and compared that database to another database that the government keeps on contractors who have been either suspended or what's called debarred from receiving federal contracts because of wrongdoing or malfeasance.
So what is the essence of this story? What happened?
So essentially, there's about six companies that have been under criminal investigation for defrauding the government, for claiming that they were small minority businesses when in fact they were not. They were much part of a larger enterprise. And despite that, and while that investigation was going on, the Air Force and the Army awarded them about $30 million in stimulus projects, 112 stimulus projects in all, at Air Force and Army bases around the country.
So who were these companies? What companies were these, and how were they linked?
The names of the companies are, the main one is, you know, APM, LLC. These are all kind of small businesses that aren't ones that will jump out as people would recognize them as something they hear about in the newspaper on TV all the time. But there's, you know, APM, LLC, 1CI, this company, All Cities Enterprises, Cherokee Chainlink, Chung & Associates, and Coleman Construction. Most of them are based out of Southern California. And what the Air Force alleges is that these companies were all established by a businessman in Southern California as a way to sort of take advantage of this program that was designed to give a leg up to economically and socially disadvantaged businesses, those that are owned by African Americans, Asian Americans, Hispanics, and Native Americans, in order to sort of help them grow and be able to compete on their own for government contracts.
And in fact, that was built into the stimulus package. I mean, they wanted to make sure that Congress and the Obama administration wanted to make sure that small businesses in general and small minority-owned companies were given preference in the awarding of stimulus contracts.
Right. There's been a lot of pressure with the stimulus, as there always is in government contracting, to ensure that there are opportunities for small businesses and opportunities for minority contractors. And, you know, in the guidance, while the overall guidance that the White House has given to the agencies is make sure everything is competitively bid, make sure everything is, you know, a fixed price contract where we don't end up with all these cost overruns. But there's also, they've also said, while that is important, we do want you to take advantage of these programs that are designed to help small businesses and minority contractors, even the ones that allow for non-competitive bidding of contracts.
Okay, so these six companies who are under investigation, there seems to be one person that's kind of at the back of all of this by the name of Craig Jackson. Who is he?
Craig Jackson is he's the CEO of Sanders Engineering, which is a few years ago the Orange County Register had a profile about him, and they said it was the largest African-American-owned mechanical contractor in the U.S., It was a really tiny business when he took it over in the 80s with five employees. And over 15, 20 years, he had turned it into a business of several hundred employees and $36 million in revenue, approaching $50 million. So he'd actually won a lot of awards from the Small Business Administration. I think in 2001, he was second runner-up to Graduate of the Year for the program. He'd won several awards for the region and was sort of recognized for mentoring other minority contractors and helping them get started. So it was an interesting turnabout that now the Air Force has found that not only was he just sort of helping and mentoring these people, he was also perhaps setting them up to take advantage of the system and get some of the, you know, a lot of the profits that he wasn't allowed to get anymore funneled back to him.
Now, according to your story, Jackson didn't return calls seeking comment, but an attorney for his firm said that the company would vigorously contest the allegations and that they basically said they hadn't done anything wrong. That's pro forma. Attorneys always do that. APM LLC was actually an Alaskan company, wasn't it?
Right. APM LLC is officially an Alaskan, or it's owned by an Alaskan Native corporation, and these ANCs, we'll call them for short, were created in the 70s as a way to create business opportunities for Alaska Native communities that for years had just survived on hunting and fishing, living in remote areas of Alaska. So over the years, they've actually, you know, quite expanded pretty far from just sort of, you know, logging and tourism and stuff like that to major major infrastructure contracts with the military. They were very involved with the Iraq reconstruction. And many, you know, one thing to know about these is they're not the employees are not necessarily Alaska Natives. Most times they're not. But how they work is that a share of the profits gets brought back to these villages. And in this case, APM was owned by the Cape Fox Corporation, which is owned by the Tlingit Natives in Saxman, Alaska, which is a really small village outside of Ketchikan. And so how this investigation came about was the Small Business Administration was really concerned that there were some Alaska Native Corporation-owned businesses that were actually serving as conduits for larger companies in order to sort of take advantage of these programs. So they started looking at it, and that's how they came across some of the concerns they had about APM, Jackson, and the other companies all being related.
We're talking about a news story that originated on the ProPublica.org website, was also published in USA Today concerning some $30 million spent by the Defense Department on contracts with firms under investigation by the federal government for alleged fraud. And we're wondering why that happened and what should be done about it and how widespread this might be. I'm also wondering what you think. You can let us know by calling 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email address is talk@WPR.org. My guest this hour is Michael Grable, who is a reporter for the website ProPublica.org, which, as you heard, is a site devoted to investigative reporting and filling the gap left by the shrinking amount of investigative reporting being done by print newspapers in this country. 800-486-8655. If you have a question for my guest, Mike Grable, or if you have a comment you'd like to make, you can call us at 800-486-8655 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. We're going to pause for just a moment, and then we'll be back with more of our guests. And if you care to join us by phone, again, it's 800-486-8655, the email talk@WPR.org. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 20 minutes after 10 o'clock. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn today. Here's what's coming up a little bit later on today, after 3 on Here on Earth. Learn about a body musician, someone who makes music purely with their body. Gene Faraca's guest has a passion that runs so deep that last year he was awarded a Guggenheim Fellowship, the first to go to a body musician. That's after 3 o'clock this afternoon on Here on Earth with Gene Faraca. This hour, we're talking about the awarding of government contracts, almost $30 million worth from the Defense Department, to firms who are under investigation by the federal government for alleged fraud. My guest is the reporter who broke the story, Michael Grable, who reports for the website ProPublica.org. And USA Today also picked up this story, and I think that's probably how we got onto it. Under investigation is not the same as indicted or convicted. What about the idea of innocent until proven guilty? I mean, none of the companies mentioned in the story has actually been charged with a crime.
Yeah, exactly. Right now, this is still in the criminal investigation phase. So there's no indictment. Court has not made the decision of innocent until proven guilty. But there are, in the federal administrative law, for contracting, after a certain amount of evidence is produced, the government does have the ability to suspend or bar a contractor from getting government contracts while they continue to investigate. What's interesting in this case is while they were starting to investigate back in August of 2008, it didn't stop, you know, and the suspicions were raised. it didn't stop the companies from getting contracts for more than another year, almost more than 13 months had passed before they went through with that order. And the Defense Criminal Investigative Service, when I spoke to them, told me that while they were investigating them for a year, they did not put out the red alert because of this, presumption of innocence until proven guilty. Once they had enough evidence to go forward, they sent the recommendations to the Air Force, which decided that it was time to prevent them from getting any new contracts.
And one of the parts of your story, one of the companies you mentioned earlier, Cherokee Chainlink, I'll just read a portion of the story here. It says, John Brewer, president of Cherokee Chainlink, said Jackson, and that's Craig Jackson we talked about earlier, had no control over his company. Quote, I'm just a client, unquote, Brewer said. Quote, his company does my accounting. He doesn't run my company and never has, unquote. He calls the contracting suspension unfair. What about that?
This is the attorney for Standards Engineering kind of made similar statements saying that these were all business relationships. You know, they were doing the accounting, and even the SBA said, you know, Standards Engineering had gotten so good at this that they should share some of their expertise with these other companies that are trying to develop by providing them with accounting services or human resources type work, and they'd actually been recognized when they won awards for this. Where it crosses the line is where the company becomes actually controlled by Craig Jackson, and that's sort of what we don't have all the evidence in the public record yet to know where that line was drawn. So their argument is that this was a misinterpretation of the SBA rules and it was all known about, whereas the Air Force's interpretation is no. In fact, Craig Jackson did cross the line and was owning it and organizing these companies for the purpose of taking advantage of this program that was so lucrative.
This could take years in court to sort out. And what happens to the people who had jobs with these companies who no longer have a project to work on?
For the stimulus contracts, they are able to continue to work on them, to finish them, because they were awarded before the suspension order went into place. The Air Force has said they're not going to cancel those contracts. What it means is, for the new contracts that come out, whether stimulus or not, these companies won't be able to bid on them anymore. So other companies will be able to bid on them and sort of create jobs for the same amount of work.
Let's go to the phones, and we'll start with a call from Bill in Winneconne.
Good morning. Fascinating subject. Thank you. What is that, in terms of error rates by the by government offices, namely the Pentagon procurement, certainly this $30 million must be minute in comparison to the actual amount of money that we suppose is being administered well. I'm very much in favor of government supervision, proper accounting, and, you know, taking responsibility for how you spend the money. And that's exceedingly important, especially in a democracy where you're not funneling money for want it to go at the behest of political people, but, well, at least not to the degree in some places. But I'm sure there are other areas where there's huge amounts of cost and buried cost and harm and externalized cost, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, like the accountants say, to find the last 5% or 10% of fraud, it costs you 90% of your expenses. And to go after the very small ones, I know they serve examples, but it seemed to me there are better ways that the Justice Department and the other offices involved could go after much larger sums and make, or much larger issues or cases and make much better examples of them. I'll take my call off the air. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Bill. Michael Grable?
Well, the sort of the standard that's held out by the Association of Certified Fraud Examiners is 7% of any company's revenue or budget will be lost to fraud. And Earl Devaney, who is the sort of chief watchdog over the stimulus package, a former Secret Service agent, said, you know, if you take that and look at the $800 billion stimulus package or so, we're talking about $55 billion that could be lost to fraud. It's early on for the stimulus package, and at this point, $30 million is probably one of the highest amounts where we've seen concerns of fraud in the stimulus money. Another area that's gotten a lot of attention recently is also the home buyer tax credit for new home buyers to get $8,000 tax credit. $8,000 doesn't sound like a lot of money, but when you add them up and add them up and add them up, you know, we're talking, it could be hundreds of millions of dollars of cases that they are investigating. These are situations that came out in an inspector general report saying that a four-year-old had bought a new house, or the money had gone to, or these were sort of IRS employees who may have taken advantage of the system and this tax credit. So we're starting, it's sort of like the very beginnings of what we're hearing about in terms of what the government is going after for looking at fraud in the stimulus package. But $30 million, when you consider $800 billion, seems like chump change. But when you add it all up, that's sort of what's getting, you know, the $55 billion that they're concerned about.
Let's take a call next from Arlene in New Berlin.
Good morning. Your program is quite interesting. You know, one of these days the American public is going to get the truth from the government, and people are going to be quite surprised. If the average individual did stuff like what they're doing, I think there would be have to build more prisons to put people in, and the government gets by with murder. I don't think it's fair. What happened to honesty? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Thanks for the call, Arlene. We're not talking about the government behaving dishonestly in this case, though, are we? We're talking about an alleged fraud perpetrated by private contractors.
Exactly. And, I mean, I what happened to honesty in federal government is not a question I can answer in a short amount of time, or one that I should probably address, because I know that's dangerous. But, you know, what she said kind of brought up something that was in one of my stories. You know, the issue of, you know, the kind of relating this to a normal situation with the government oversight. I talked to Senator Tom Coburn in Oklahoma, who was concerned about the story and sent a letter to Defense Secretary Robert Gates asking for answers. And when I interviewed him, he said to me, you know, if somebody fixed your garage door and they defrauded you, or rather you thought that they had defrauded you, would you give them more business? And he said, nobody else in the country would do that. Only the federal government would do that. So that is, you know, something that people have said.
Here's an email. Says, the innocent till proven guilty does not apply. That is a criminal standard. Letting contracts, even government contracts, is a civil matter. In civil matters, the standard is the balance of probabilities. If you think that it is likely that the wrongdoing occurred, that is sufficient reason to act.
I have nothing really to add to that. I think this is a criminal investigation, but that he's right that this innocence until proven guilty presumption is something that is a criminal court matter, and the administrative rules for canceling a contract, you know, don't have to be tried out in a court before we decide, before the government decides whether or not to give contracts to another person. And one of the things that was sort of an issue in this case was, even though they had to gather evidence to officially suspend the contractors, what could the government have done to notify the contracting officers that there was some concern? Because every time the contracting officer decides to award a new project, they have to make a determination of how responsible the contractor is. There's, you know, government contractors are not supposed to go to irresponsible contractors. That's in the administrative law. So that's sort of the sort of missing piece here is sort of how much did the contracting officers know, or could they have known in that year time that they were deciding?
Well, what systems does the government have in place to guard against awarding federal contracts to businesses that are under suspicion or who may have actually broken the law? I mean, I've heard about something called the Recovery Accountability and Transparency Board. In fact, I think you mentioned it earlier. But is there some sort of central database that those who are responsible for letting contracts can call up on their computers and they type in the name of the company and it either pops up or it doesn't?
Right now, there is once the contractor is suspended or debarred, at that point, you know, so there's this system that government contracting officers are supposed to type in the name of the company or the DUNS number, you know, the identification number, to see if they have had enough problems that they are banned from receiving new contracts. However, the Government Accountability Office, you know, the big congressional watchdog, looked at the system back in January and found many holes and gaps in the system. People were able to get around it simply by changing the name of their company and moving to a new address. You know, there was people that were missed simply because they forgot to put the comma in before incorporated. You know, there's simple computer glitches like that were causing people to be able to keep getting government contracts even though they had been officially suspended. The period in between the suspension or sort of the issues and questions being raised in the suspension is a big sort of gap right now, and I know there is some legislation and some systems in the works for the government to try to address that, but I don't think it's been solved at this point.
800-486-8655. 800-486-8655 is the toll-free number that you can use to reach the program. If you would prefer to send an email, you can do that as well, talk@WPR.org. Talk@WPR.org. Again, 800-486-8655. Tell us what you think about this topic, and we'll continue to discuss it for the rest of the hour. Let's take another call. We'll go to Dave in Birchwood.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning, Dave.
It's more on a related topic. I just recently read this in Mother Jones, and it was on Crooks and Liars and Ross Story, etc. It said basically that Acorn in the last 20 years had received $53 million total in federal funds, yet companies like in 15 years, Raytheon, Dynacorp, Lockheed Martin, they paid $6 billion in fines, you know, after they've been found guilty, and they just apparently take the fraud and roll it in there, and what they get away with is part of their way of doing business. And this came about actually when John Boehner tried to make smoke out of the Acorn thing and passed some legislation that said any company that defrauded the government couldn't get any more contracts, but he had kind of forgotten about the big boys who are getting all the money. I'll hang up now and keep up the good work.
Thanks for the call, Dave. Well, what about it? I mean, Dave's point, you get these companies who have paid enormous fines to the federal government for wrongdoing, and yet they continue to get these multi-billion-dollar contracts. Why isn't more made out of that?
Right. There's a nonpartisan group called the Project on Government Oversight that actually has a website called www.contractormisconduct.org where they track wrongdoing and fines that have been paid by the top 100 or so contractors in the U.S. And I've looked into this issue in the past, and what I've heard from the White House and from other folks is that, you know, they take into account the amount of the work. So while a company like Raytheon might have gotten $6 billion, might have had to pay $6 billion in fines, which seems really, you know, like a large amount, they also may have gotten hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars in contracts over that period of time. You know, I did a story way back in May that looked at some contractors' backgrounds and found that there were some that had paid $1 million for destroying part of a national sea life refuge. And there was, you know, a company that was involved, that's getting stimulus money, that was involved with the problematic interrogations in Abu Ghraib. Well, let's get this money.
Let's talk about that. I believe you're referring to CACI International. What kind of company is that? What do they do?
So CACI is essentially a large government consultant. They do a lot of different type of work. They provide staff to review contracts. They provide staff. They provide an interrogators in the case in Iraq. And they are apparently have a Forest Service contract and the stimulus package to help them essentially improve their contracting system and get money out the door faster. So this is an extremely large government contractor. I don't have the list in front of me, but they are definitely in the top 100. And so, you know, when we asked the government about this, they said, well, you know, we always take everything into account on scope. So whereas, you know, APM, companies like APM and all these others are really small companies that don't have a history of working on these tremendously large projects of the government, you know, they can, it's much easier to suspend them than a much larger company that may have hundreds of billions of dollars of government work going on right now. A good example of this is Bechtel or some of these other companies that have been involved in a number. They've been raised several times during Hurricane Katrina in Iraq and the Big Dig in Boston with problems, you know, related to their contracts. However, they've also been involved in a lot of other major government projects that have gone well and successfully. So it's all sort of, you know, relative in the nature. And I'm sort of not the best person to answer sort of when does that cross the line.
Now, pardon me, but this sounds like it starts to sound like the golden rules. Them as has the gold makes the rules. I mean, do we have one rule for big companies with multi-billion-dollar contracts and another rule for small companies that have much smaller contracts?
There are certainly people who would argue that, but I think that's more of a question for you know, the government contracting officers to answer.
I'm reading your story from your website about the CACI issue, and there was something in here. It says, President Obama has said the scope of the stimulus demands unprecedented efforts to root out waste, inefficiency, and unnecessary spending. ProPublica plans ongoing coverage as contracts roll out and is recruiting volunteers to join the effort through our ProPublica reporting network. What's that all about?
Yeah, you know, one thing we realize, even with sort of the 30 or so reporters that we have in our newsroom, which is, you know, the largest staff dedicated solely to investigative reporting in the country, we realize that there are hundreds, thousands of people around the country who have interest in doing some of their own reporting in their own backyard and have special knowledge about sort of what's going on in their own backyard. So we're trying to sort of make use of this sort of desire in the internet age to do this, this sort of citizen journalism, and muster all the forces together to find out what's really going on the ground and produce larger stories. It's kind of a new trend in journalism right now to kind of put all those resources together to produce, you know, really good journalism. So what we're asking people to do is, you know, if they have a project in their backyard, and you can go on our website and you can actually adopt a project if you want to track and see who is this contractor. We provided tips to help people background check contractors, check for political donations, check for problems in their past with worker safety violations or environmental regulations, and report back to us about what they find. And if there is somebody who does get a great scoop, we do give them credit for bringing the story to our attention.
800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, that's the number to call to join the program, or you can send an email to talk@wpr.org. We're talking about the issue of government contracts being awarded to firms under investigation by the federal government, and why that might happen and what it means, and we wonder what you think about this. Are you aware of some contract awarded to somebody who maybe shouldn't have had one, and would you like to talk about it on the radio? Well, you can call us at 800-486-8655 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll see who is on the phone and wants to talk with us, and we'll continue our conversation with Michael Grable, who reports for the website ProPublica.org. I'm John Munson, in for Kathleen Dunn today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's just about 10:43. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Next up, after 11, Larry Mueller welcomes his favorite animal behaviorist, Patricia McConnell, for a conversation on tooth chattering and snap chatter. That's coming up after the news at 11 o'clock. Larry Mueller steps in on the Ideas Network. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn today. And in this hour, we're talking with Michael Grable, reporter for the website ProPublica.org. And the story is some of the stimulus money that is being spent by the Department of Defense actually went to contractors who were under investigation for defrauding the federal government. And we're talking about the existence of fraud in the awarding of stimulus contracts and what that means. And it's not just the Defense Department, I think, that we're concerned about here. The only about half of the stimulus money has actually been spent. The rest remains to be spent. And we're, I guess, in a way talking about, OK, who's minding the store? Who's watching out for the what contractors are getting which money? I'm wondering what you think about that. 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, talk at WPR.org. So what happens if these contracts, the contracts in the $30 million, almost $30 million we were talking about earlier, Michael Grable, what happens if these contracts are canceled? Could we end up spending more money in court costs and so forth than if we just left them alone?
It's possible. One thing that somebody did raise to me was that if you were to cancel these contracts and rebid them and stall the project for another several months, it could actually end up costing taxpayers more money than it would if we just let these people finish their contracts while they finish the investigation. So that is certainly an issue. It's something, obviously, you would have to do accounting on and see how far along they are in the project. But it is kind of the other edge of the sword, I guess.
Yeah. Well, let's go to the phones and take Patrick from Milwaukee next. Patrick, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. A friend of mine, he actually went over and was working for KBR. And I was wondering if they're involved in this at all, because he told me that they lost one of their contracts in, I think it was Afghanistan, in March, and another company is moving in on it, and if they're involved at all in this.
KBR being Kellogg, Brown, and Root.
Yes.
Michael Grable, do we know anything about that?
I don't know if KBR has gotten any stimulus contracts at this point. Some large companies have, but they have not rung a bell as being one of the biggest winners at this point. One thing I did want to chime in on something we talked about before the break with the ProPublica reporting network. Tomorrow is a very big day in the stimulus world. The government is going to post on their website, recovery.gov, about 131,000 projects that have been awarded through state governments, local governments, the federal government. And for the first time, we'll be able to see a comprehensive list of who has gotten stimulus money. So we would really like to have more eyes on this. Obviously, it's going to be a large task to sift through it. So if anyone is interested to sign up for the ProPublica Reporting Network, you can go to our website, ProPublica.org, and there is a way to sign in, or you can send an email to Amanda at ProPublica.org.
Amanda at ProPublica.org?
Yeah, when Amanda is our director or editor of distributed reporting.
Okay, so there is somebody that looks these things over. How do you check? How do you fact check these reports when they come in? I mean, the people you're asking to give these reports to you are clearly not professional journalists. How do you make sure that what they're telling you is true?
Obviously, it doesn't go right up on the website, but there are certain things that we ask people to check if they want to help us out. They can go ahead and do even a quick Google search on the company and see what pops up. They can go check court records in their area. They can run them through the suspension and debarred list, they may have a personal knowledge that this company happens to be the mayor's or the city councilman's brother-in-law who's in charge of that district. That's all interesting stuff that me sitting in my office in New York or any of our reporters sitting in Washington or wherever might not know, that the person in Boise, Idaho, or, you know, not to pick on anybody, but some, you know, town in Missouri or Texas, has some sort of relation to the contractor. And that's certainly something that, President Obama has talked about, and the Recovery, Accountability, and Transparency Board has talked about being concerned.
Well, what do you say to the person who says, okay, so what? I mean, who cares? Yeah, this stuff happens all the time. I'm really shocked that some politician would award a contract to his brother-in-law. And, you know, and how much money are we willing to spend to make sure this never happens? No matter what we do, somebody is going to find a way to game the system and get an advantage. And the only way, I guess, to prevent that from ever happening is to never spend any money. How do you respond to that?
Well, you know, I think the alternative of throwing up our hands and letting letting these group, you know, letting fraud happen is sort of the worst alternative is throwing up our hands and saying it's going to happen. Let's just have no faith in government that they can prevent any of this stuff. You know, I certainly came into journalism with the idealistic impression that somehow the reporting I could do would actually, you know, help improve the world and make government better, and I understand the argument that there are, you know, you don't want to spend a ton of money to find a little penny of waste, but to throw up your hands and say let things happen as they fall, you know, I think is not the best alternative.
Well, it's always nice to meet an idealist. There are so few of you left. let's talk to Derek in Round Lake, Illinois next. Derek,
yes.
Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Great topic. Although I'm an atheist, I have to say God bless you to you and your guest. The interesting story came out yesterday, USA Today, that actually people can also think about acting locally and thinking globally. There was a company out of Los Angeles originally, which was transplanted into New Orleans, that was hiring Filipino teachers for local school boards and, you know, charging exorbitant fees and ripping them off and also keeping them sort of like a slavery type of positions. And this has actually been uncovered by local reporting out of Louisiana, and USA Today actually participated in it. So the citizens themselves can actually take advantage of looking at the local paperwork, what's really going on in their school districts as well as their neck of the woods. One thing I also like to kind of remind as well, tell the public, is that without local contracts being awarded, any kind of track record of the corporation, such as waste management or anybody else who's performing the services, as far as the past compliance of the laws, the past corporate history, is totally overlooked. It's like doesn't exist. What's really coming to the place is just the, whatever the price they can provide for the service, and that's what really matters. And I think that's why later on customers as well as the residents get ripped off and they just have a variety of different grievances which are not being addressed by public officials because they either there's somebody connected to the company personally or there are some other circumstances. So I think it's very important for somebody like ProPublica bringing some of the issues such as this and people just taking this, quote-unquote, a virus of citizen advocacy and just taking it to their local roots level.
Derek, thanks for the call. Michael Grable, I guess one advantage of the new media world that we live in is that eyes are everywhere. Eyes and ears are everywhere, and anybody can see things and share that information with you or anybody else.
Exactly. What I think makes us unique, and I think, you know, the idea isn't to send us everything and we'll post it online, because, you know, obviously, being investigative journalists, we have really, really high standards in terms of what we want, you know, what we'll report. So we check out all these things, and we have the tools and sort of the knowledge and experience to dig into these topics a little bit deeper and find out even more than sort of the tip that we get. So one thing you see with the internet these days is there's a lot of people who are reporters. Years ago, the only way to get something published was to go to the reporter. And nowadays, if I hear something in the coffee house that I go and think is a scoop, by the time I've done it, somebody's Twittered it or blogged it, the coffee house is the web. what's different, what's needed, is investigative reporters to sort out all that stuff and really dig deep and find out the uncovered stories that aren't just, I heard this little soundbite, or Republicans say this and Democrats say that. So I think by combining those two resources, it could be really powerful.
Steve in Viola, you're up next.
Hey, how are you doing? I just had a comment. I worked up at Fort McCoy, and I worked as a contractor. I'm working for the federal government right now. But I've seen this abuse go on time and time again. I've called Waste, Fraud, and Abuse Hotline. The new contractor that just came over and took one of the contractors, he was a banned contractor. They were banned from federal contracts, but they paired up with a minority contractor out of Alaska who bid the contractor off and then had this contractor that was banned administer the contract. So it's kind of you can't keep them out. It's hard. You can't hardly do it. It's almost impossible. And I've seen that time and time again. I've been in the military for 28 years, and it happens all the time. And what frustrates me is there's a Waste, Fraud, and Abuse Hotline. You'll call that hotline. They'll investigate in 3 or 4 years if they get time.
Steve, thanks for the call. Michael, what about it? I mean, do we have these musical chairs? And what's to stop somebody? Okay, I got banned. I'll form a new company with somebody else, and we'll come back in, and we'll get the same contract.
Well, yeah, this is sort of a huge issue in the federal government and federal contracting. I'm really interested in the case he was talking about, and if he wants to email me to talk more about it, it's michael.graybell@propublica.org. This is the stuff we're going to be looking at for the next several months with the stimulus package and seeing if anyone is trying to get around the rules or get in the back door after they've been banned. It happens. The report I was talking about back in January, where the congressional watchdog, the Government Accountability Office, looked at this system that supposedly was supposed to root out contractors, had one great, really interesting case where a guy who was a Medicare contractor was banned for 5 years, and he managed to transfer the company to his wife's name, and his wife ran the company for several years. When the auditors came back and said, hey, you can't do that, he transferred the company to a neighbor and was able for 5 years to play this game where he kept transferring the company and the government didn't know about it. And by then, his ban was up and he was, back in the mix and able to get contracts again. So that was sort of a big hole that somebody was able to crawl through and still get government contracts. It certainly mm-hmm. happened.
Let's take a call from Lee in La Crosse.
Hi, good
Lee,
morning.
Good morning.
It's Mr. Grabel?
Yes.
He should win the Pulitzer Prize.
Thank you very much.
I'm a former compliance officer for the federal government. 1972 to 1979, and you're writing the book that I should have wrote 30 years ago. I saw stuff I couldn't believe, and I'll cut to the quick. I worked for HEW, okay, and then I was transferred to HUD. Senator Eagleton, you remember Senator Eagleton?
Yes, we're behind him 1,000%.
Well, he called me into his office in Washington, D.C., and told me to redo all my paperwork. I can't mention the name of the contractor in St. Louis, but it's a $40 million project. He never hired a woman or a minority, although they were available. And we took him to the Justice Department to cut off the funding. Senator Eagleton stopped it, and we had to start all over again. There's so much politics involved in this, people would not believe. And that's my comment.
Lee, thanks for the call, Lee from La Crosse. This is nothing new, Lee says. It's been going on for years.
Right, and one thing that's interesting with the stimulus package was there was much made early on that there was no earmarks in the stimulus package. Essentially, there was no formal process for people to steer a project to their local area and their constituents outside of the competitive bidding rules. However, we've seen that multiple letters from congressmen and senators asking for a particular project to the federal agencies or to local state agencies that were awarding the contracts. So drawing what he says, having that inside knowledge of somebody, called me in the office and told me to redo this contract, is really, really interesting. If there's anybody out there who knows anything about that with a stimulus package, that's something certainly that I'd really be interested in looking into.
We're just about out of time. I want to make sure people know how to get a hold of you. Your last name is spelled G-R-A-B-E-L-L. It's pronounced Grable, but there's no Y in there. So your email address would be michael.grable@propublica.org, correct?
That's correct.
And propublica.org is the website, and I think your link is your email link is actually on there, so people could just go to the website and click that if they missed the correct spelling of your name. I want to thank you very much for being my guest in this hour of the program. We learned a lot about contracting and how it works and where all the holes are. Good luck as you continue to report this story.
Thank you very much.
Michael Grable is a reporter for the website ProPublica.org. He broke the story about these contracts going to companies under criminal investigation. This program was produced by Rob Schroeder and Rhonda Fanning, and Rob Schroeder did on-air production for today's broadcast. If you'd like to listen to it again, you can go to the website WPR.org. It should be up there later today. You can click on the link and listen to it in real time. Larry Mueller is in next. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn today. Hope you have a nice Thursday. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.